Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
You're listening to Text Message with me, Nate Langson.
And I'm Ian Morris.
And this week, we can't really go a week without talking about what the mobile network 3 did, which is that it made good on its promise to try blocking ads at the network level. It did this for, at least reportedly, for 24 hours on the 15th of June last week. And essentially what it did was use the technology of an Israeli company called Shine to deep packet inspect, for want of a better term. And one of the execs from Shine has said on record they use deep packet inspection to discover when you are potentially about to be served an ad and stop it from ever getting to your phone. And the companies will say this is to reduce the amount of data that ads take up. It could be anything between 10, 20, 30% of your web browsing taken up by ads, depending on who you ask. And this is a way to get away from that. And if you listen to the company Shine, they talk a big smack game about how ads are an abuse of power by the ad networks. And we'll get to that in a second. Ian, before we go any further, because I believe you have a 3 contract.
I do.
Were you contacted to take part in this?
No.
No.
And I checked and I wasn't included on it.
Because this was opt-in. This trial was opt-in. And I've tried quite hard to find an example of somebody who had opted into this service. One person on Twitter, who I'm not going to name now, I'll link to this Twitter conversation we had, but one user did get back to me who said that apparently it was enabled for him, but he didn't notice any difference at all, but mostly because he used apps rather than general browsing. He said that he was contacted by email with an invitation to volunteer, which he accepted, and then he had a notification when the date would take place. But yeah, he said he didn't notice anything different, but it mostly just because the apps bypass it, which they probably do. One of the things on the FAQ for 3 that they've said is that if the adverts are native, you know, if they're this kind of advertorial thing, or if they are within the app, like for say a promoted tweet or a promoted message in Facebook, they are not affected. It seems that at least initially, it's targeting ads that are displayed within a web browser and are dynamic based on your browsing activity. But you say you didn't have any of this at all, Ian?
No, I checked specifically. I mean, I work at home, so the very largest percentage of my day I'm on Wi-Fi. So I turned off Wi-Fi and had a look, and got an amusing amount of adverts, like, you know, as you sometimes do on websites. And thought, well, obviously they haven't turned this off then. But then I wasn't asked, and I didn't, and I'm not surprised. Had I been, I would have opted in for the day, because I'm obviously quite interested to see how it looks.
You know, I've been doing a lot of research into the technology that is making this possible and the companies that are involved in making this happen. And a few things have come, you know, I think come to the surface of, or should come to the surface of this discussion. You know, one of them is around just the company that is providing the ad blocking technology. This is a company called Shine. Their website is getshine.com. And I was having a browse around the website just to try and get a bit of a sense for sort of how they present what they do. And I found myself getting extremely angry over just some of the wording and the some of the underlying just hate for adverts that this company seems to present. I've read some interviews with some of their execs, and they say they're not anti-ads. They're anti-abusive ads. But when you look through this website, some of the wording that they use, I mean, it is just full of hyperbole that just makes adverts on the whole just sound like somewhere akin to piracy. You can, the wording here is very similar to what you could expect to come from a music body website talking about how piracy is going to destroy the music business. I picked out one paragraph here just to explain, and this is just from a regular sort of about page on this website. This is the way they choose to word what they're doing. And this refers to the IAB, Advertising Board, sort of admitting that something was up with ads. They say, whether sincere or crocodile tears, the fact is that ad tech brought about its own inevitable demise by coming to depend on dirty revenue generated through intrusive practices that abuse customers and defraud advertising businesses.
Remarkable.
And it goes on to compare, you know, they compare themselves to Muhammad Ali. they just go so overboard. And it, and they, there are quotes here. They have quotes littered across the website. Quote, we need to be worried, VP Ads Commerce at Google. Quote, we messed up, Scott Cunningham, SVP Technology and Ad Ops at IAB. Quote, ad blocking represents consumer outrage, another guy at the A&A. And this goes on and on and on and on. And it just makes me question this company's motives.
Yeah.
And it also, you know, they don't
charge.
It's like
the Peter Thiel of ad blocking. You know, they're basically, they have, that someone there has been hurt somehow by an advert in some way.
It makes you wonder. It makes you wonder. Well, one of the guys, one of the people quoted in an article on TechCrunch that I read about this company and how it uses deep packet inspection was previously a reporter at TechCrunch. So who knows? But basically, the company doesn't charge its clients money to install its tech. It doesn't charge. So Three, at least according to everything I've read so far, Three does not pay Shine to put its technology in Three's network infrastructure center to deliver this trial and potentially this service to its users. So it's not being paid. It's got quite a lot of funding. So the question is, if, let's just say theoretically, Three adopts this technology long term, and other carriers, as a company called Digicel that operates somewhere else in the world, they have adopted this and adopted it late last year, apparently are still using it. So some people are taking this up. You've got a question, where is their money going to come from? And the only thing that I can see so far is that their money is ultimately going to come from letting some ads through. That's how some of these ad blocking services have made money. They allow a kind of whitelist for companies who put out good ads to let those ads through. It's so messy.
In some ways, this is exactly the same problem as the publishing industry has itself, isn't it? Because what you've got is you've got this company that goes, oh, we'll offer this service for free. And then long term, they're going to realise that they can't offer a service for free, which is exactly the same problem as publishers have. You know, they'd like to be able to offer a service for free, but ultimately you have to pay writers and you have to pay, you know, people who create content. And the only way to do that at the moment is through a variety of different pieces of advertising. And, you know, that it's not a surprise, is it? That my favourite quote is from their press section on the website. It says, ad blocking is a consumer right, full stop. But if you're blocking ads, you're not a consumer anymore, are you, really? You're a you're not paying for a service, so you don't have any rights, really. If you're using something for free, I would say that you've basically sort of given up your right to, I don't know, to consider yourself a consumer, your right to complain about things, if you will.
I mean, the whole argument that, you know, if you're browsing a website, you should feel free to use an ad blocker, but at the same time, the website therefore should also feel free to block the ad blocker. Like, that feels like a fair battle. But when it comes in that, you know, ads are abusing the user, it's like, well, that's not strictly true. The user is choosing to go to a website. Like, yes, it's totally the website and the ad industry's fault if their ads are so obnoxious that people don't want to go to their websites anymore.
Yes.
But they're still choosing to go to their websites. Then how is the ad abusing them? You know, if you walk into the middle of the fight, you don't get to, you know, sue somebody because you got punched in the face. You stepped into the middle of a fight. You know, it's not your right to not get punched in that situation. So I don't understand basically how this argument would continue. And the whole privacy argument seems to be null and void when you go on the record and say you use deep packet inspection as one of the ways to provide this service.
So they will know everything about what you're doing, beyond what you know, a normal ISP would really... I mean, ISPs know where you're going, don't they? But they don't know what the kind of data you're transferring is.
Well, it might be anonymized. It might be anonymized. Yes. You know, it's an on-demand sort of system that basically any data that comes into three gets filtered before it gets identified to somebody. But it's still, if one of your arguments is giving the user control and privacy, well, it does feel a little bit invasive to have them opening your packets.
We should try and get an answer out of three, really. I mean, it's as for me, particularly as a customer, I believe it's my right to understand what data is being given to third parties. You know, I don't want this company being any more involved in my... I mean, I haven't signed on to have my data touched by Shine. I mean, I've agreed to let Three do what they want with that kind of stuff, because obviously it's part of having a mobile phone. But I'm not... And that doesn't mean I give them permission to just give that data to just anyone.
Well, they say that the data isn't being handed over, but it all feels like a little bit, you know, smoke and mirrors, because at the end of the day, they have to look at your packets to know what to filter out. So
yes,
however you word it, somebody somewhere is looking.
I'd love a look at the thing that what Three has agreed to from Shine. I'd love to know what's in that agreement, because, you know, Three's getting something out of it, but Shine must have something in the contract that allows it to do certain things with, you know, monetize that data.
Well, I'm going to do a little digging and I'm going to see if we can get them to talk to us on the show and kind of have this argument out in the open, because I think a lot of the claims that Shine makes are valid. You know, there is a problem with the ad industry. There is a problem, particularly with mobile, with ads taking up huge amounts of data. There is a problem with obnoxious, intrusive ads taking up the whole screen.
Some security problems and such. Oh, yeah. Taking up the whole screen. Real problem.
Huge problem. The question is whether it's their job to answer that problem, you know, and are they going to be happy as a business that is being funded by investors to basically come in as the white knight and solve the problem and say, great, we fix the ad industry and then leave? Because if they will, then that's fair, because publishers will benefit long term, consumers benefit long term, the industry of journalism will benefit long term. I suspect that's not the problem. It's kind of like a personal trainer. He, you know, once you get fit, he doesn't want to let your money go. He wants to start building up your muscles and other things as well. They're not good at just going away.
No.
Although they may have to, because if we do remain in the EU after this terrifying week is over with, then the EU said that by 2017, deep packet inspection is almost completely going to be banned anyway. So it may be all null and void. podcast@natelangson.com. That is where you can send your thoughts. And obviously, if you have been contacted by Three to be involved in this trial, let us know. podcast@natelangson.com. Ian, it's great to be a gamer these days, because you've got Twitch, you've got YouTube gaming, you've got all sorts of ways of interacting with gamers across multiple platforms. You probably haven't even got a television set. So what better time could there be than for the UK to launch a 24-hour gaming esports TV channel on regular broadcast television? Ian, what could be a better time?
I think that's actually quite a good idea. And actually, I am
We'll get to the reason why it is a good idea, because I kind of agree. But just answer the question, what could be better? Holiday in the Algarve?
Free gold.
Yes, I admit, free gold.
Plenty of things are better than an esports TV channel, but if you like esports, I would say this is probably a really good thing.
Well, what is going to happen is there's going to be a 24-hour channel. It's going to be dedicated to competitive gaming, that is esports, that's things like your Dota 2s, your Counter-Strike Global Offensive, and so forth. And it's going to be broadcast by Jinx Esports TV. It's going to be on Sky. It's co-funded by ITV as well. So there's quite a big mainstream interest in this. And it's going to broadcast from a new studio in King's Cross, which is fantastic. And there are over 100 esports events, like live major esports events that take place, or took place last year at least. They generate millions of pounds in ticket sales. There are tens of millions of dollars of pounds of prize money up for grabs. Last year, the League of Legends World Championship, over 35 million people watched it on Twitch and other streaming platforms. And there are some estimations that this year, $500 million of revenue will be generated from advertising and sponsorship and merchandising just around these events. And that could be over $1 billion by 2019. That's just one report I've seen, but you see similar numbers around the world. This is only getting bigger. There are other TV stations. I think there's one in Sweden that broadcasts this sort of stuff. There are certainly others. I think ESPN did something earlier this year in this vein. So a lot of people are dipping their toe in the water. But Ian, you obviously have an existing opinion here about why this is a good idea. Of all the things that a gamer doesn't want, it's to sit in front of a regular TV watching non-pausable, non-playbackable television. So
yeah,
what's
the
point?
Well, there's some truth in that. I don't know. I mean, because there is also the, I suppose, with in a world where you've got Twitch and YouTube gaming, it is largely unnecessary. But I guess they're just trying to get this to a wider audience and to have people tune in on a broadcast channel, perhaps with slightly better presentation. Like, there's pro leagues, aren't there? And it's done to a very high standard because obviously there's a lot of money involved. It's good background TV, isn't it, really? I mean, I had a very rare Saturday where I wasn't, I didn't have, the kids weren't around, my wife wasn't around. So I just put Twitch on and watched some, I can't even remember what the game was now. But it was good. It was fun. I watched a bit. I thought the skill here is pretty interesting. The idea would be that you'd feel like these are games that you play and to see them played at a different level. I suppose it's the same as someone who is good at go-karting watching F1 and going, oh, that is a different league. As it were.
I think you've hit one of the nails on the head there, which is about, it's about reaching a wider audience. There are a lot of people who don't know what the term esports even means, and these are people who may discover it for the first time. And that could be great, you know, regardless of the sport. If you have somebody with very good, well-produced commentary, like you say, that could make something like this interesting, break it down, explain the terminology, then that could open up the audience quite considerably. But it strikes me that the whole real benefit to this is if you can get the demographic that does watch this kind of stuff, young males, basically, they're an incredibly hard to reach market for television advertisers.
Yeah.
Because they don't watch television. So if you could produce something that genuinely compelled them to watch TV again, then you're talking about a huge capture of that potential demographic. So the whole thing is about advertising. Underneath whatever wording is used to say, isn't this great, we can open esports up to everybody else, it's probably an advertising play, right?
Oh yeah. I mean, well, what isn't? I mean, it's every TV channel has to be supported by adverts, doesn't it, really?
I mean
it'll
more
get some
so
of Sky's revenue, I guess, but you know,
I just mean more so than, say, it would just be good for more people to know esports.
Yeah, I think there, you know, there is something to that, because obviously esports is something where people sort of are a bit snobby about it, aren't they? And they say things like, oh, you know, why would anyone want to watch someone playing a game? And I'm like, well, why would anyone want to watch men kicking a ball around a bit of grass? It, you know, sport doesn't make a lot of sense to me in a lot of ways.
Are you telling me you're not a fan of sports ball, Ian?
Do you
not care about that local or international team?
No, I mean, it's particularly not at the moment when I can't escape it. I don't care about it, no. I have absolutely no investment in the England team. In fact, at the moment, I am so annoyed by the whole of England that I am actually, you know, I'm actively avoiding the whole thing because actually I don't understand why anyone wants to be part of that, you know, little cult of England. I think esports is interesting. For me, it's more interesting professionally. I mean, I don't watch it necessarily for recreation, but I could see having it on. There are certain games I would like to watch. I'd be more inclined to watch CSGO than I would be LOL. I think it's good that there's obviously going to be something for people. Like you say, you're right. Kids, they use YouTube, don't they? They use YouTube, yeah. And they use Twitch, and so it isn't going to be, I don't think it's going to be a walk in the park for them. But if they can produce some distinctive TV with some, you know, more in depth looks at the people involved, who knows?
That's exactly where it probably needs to go, and it'll be an interesting experiment if nothing else, because this is not a type of entertainment that is getting any smaller. It is only getting bigger. And TV, live TV in particular, is not going away anytime soon either. So if there is a way to combine those two things, then it seems nice that we're able to be a part of that experiment. We, as in Britain, Ian, not you and I, because obviously you and I have no preference whether it is watching 20 sweaty men in shorts on a piece of grass or 20 sweaty teenagers in their tracksuit bottoms. We'll be in the pub talking about real things, like whether ad blocking is or is not.
Yeah.
Anyway, there we go. podcast@natelangston.com if you would like to dispute any of Ian and I's opinion on sports ball or the local team to which you may or may not be affiliated. Well, coming up shortly, we're going to talk about why Ian, the man who I have spent many years sitting next to listening to why he's angry at things Apple has done, is so excited about something Apple has done. And also the thing I'm most excited about that has come out of the E3 gaming show. But first, let's quickly check in with Tom Merritt, who's waiting across the pond to tell us some highlights from the last week of discussions over at dailytechnewsshow.com. Tom.
Thanks, Nate. This week on Daily Tech News Show, we talked about what we actually want from bots beyond just Uber rides and setting calendar appointments. We busted some common misconceptions about hackers, including the fact that they're mostly not bad people and they're trying to make the world a better place. And Jenny Josephson asked some developers what a developer actually does and how we users can be less annoying to them. All that and more at dailytechnewsshow.com. Back to you.
Thanks, Tom. And this is a good moment to remind you, dearest listener, who we love deeply, very deeply, truly, but only within the confines of the law and the Queen's definition of what is decent.
Where are you going?
No idea, mate. But basically, we need your help. We need you to tell your friends, your colleagues, and your enemies about text message. And consider leaving us a review in iTunes if you haven't already. We never actually ask for money. We have no intention of doing so, nor do I plan on taking advertising for the show. What matters is that people listen to it every week, that they talk about it, and that's something that you guys can help with out there in listener land or whatever a similar thing is. I've had the flu for 8 days, so I'm kind of off my game right now. Maybe set yourself a reminder on your phone. You could even do it right now. That's the joy of mobile technology. Set a reminder now to post on Twitter or Facebook, whatever's your poison, and tell your friends, tell your colleagues, and get someone to try the show. And it'll really help if you tell them how to get the show or any other show, dailytechnewsshow.com, many other tech shows out there. If you want to tell them that, they'll all benefit by you just saying, here's the kind of app to use, here's how it works, and here's a good show or two to get started. Or if nothing else, a review in iTunes helps keep us up in the charts over there. Thank you in advance. Right, Ian, one of the things we have on this show as a rule is that we're very UK and slightly Europe focused, for now at least, and so we tend to ignore a lot of the sort of major global tech events because, you know, people listening to this show, if they want to hear this, they kind of already know that sort of stuff. So we don't need to go over like most of the other shows do and recount everything. But we did think it was worth picking a highlight or two, didn't we?
Yeah, we did. And like you say, you know, I haven't always been the most positive about Apple. But recently, I have to say, I have come round. Do use an iPhone quite a bit. I use Android a lot as well. People think I'm like totally into the whole, Apple thing, but I'm not. But actually, one of the things I did very much like the Apple Watch when it came out, but I could definitely see some room for improvement. And fortunately, I think Apple agreed.
So the watch, I mean, of all the products that I was sort of counting on you having a long-standing hatred for, was something like the Apple Watch, where there's no clearly defined killer app. That seems to be one of the things that always gets your craw, is things that don't seem to solve a problem. So
yes, and that's true. And I suppose you could argue that the Apple Watch doesn't really solve any problems. But what I would say about smartwatches in general was that for some reason, and I can't explain this any more than you would be able to, is that I actually sort of kind of really like the idea. So I started obviously with Android Wear, but just consistent disappointment with that operating system. It is horrible. And I mean, you know, there are some nice watches that run Android Wear, but they are all hampered by the fact that the notification system on it is awful. Like, there will be so many times where I would look at my watch and half of the clock is obscured by a notification. And Apple got around that by just not doing notifications in that way. And actually, the notification system on the Apple Watch is kind of annoying in its own different way. But I think the hardware is nice, and that's always going to be where Apple gets it right, isn't it? I think the design of the watch is nice. I prefer round watches, but the Apple Watch is the one that I feel looks nice on my wrist. It feels the most like an actual watch.
But this update, this speed of loading apps, this makes a big difference, does it?
Because I think it does, because I think that's the only thing where you could really take the Apple Watch down would be on when you go to load an app. And in fact, it's so bad that I haven't bothered doing it, really. I tend to rely on the watch for the things that it does well. The way they separate it out, I mean, you've got a watch, but you don't really use it, do you?
Well, I do, but I just tend to use it for notifications and as a watch.
Yeah exactly, and it's very good for that. But I guess the thing is that the complications, or whatever they're called, were done really well. So those are what you access quickly by swiping up, and you go along and you're able to see select apps, and I believe that they are probably always stored in memory, so they open relatively quickly. I have one for like City Mapper that tells me when there's any delays on the train, which is cool. The heart rate monitor lives in there, you know, that kind of stuff, and you can choose what goes in there as long as they support it. And I think what they're doing now is they're sort of taking that system and sort of extending it slightly, so that it will also be able to put just whole apps in there, and that will be running in memory all the time, and they'll be quicker, and they will always be getting data. Now, that might be bad for battery life and stuff like that, we'll see. But I think from addressing the major problem with the watch, which is that apps are a little bit unusable, I think it handles that. I am never going to tell anyone that there is a point to wearables like this, watches. You either like them or you don't. The Apple Watch, as I said, is most like an actual watch. So if you're going to wear one, that's the one to get, I would say, as long as you've got an iPhone. Obviously, it's completely useless if you don't have an iPhone.
Well, I obviously, this is an incredible red letter day where we talk about an Apple event on the podcast, and I didn't really see anything that really got me super excited. And it's over to Ian Morris to talk excitedly about the new Apple product. How times have changed, mate.
Well, you know, nothing stays the same, does it, Chief? That's the way of the world.
Well, simultaneous to WWDC taking place was E3. And the thing I picked out of E3 was the incredibly weird decision by Microsoft to launch, or rather to announce the launch, of a new console, a new Xbox One S console this year, but also confirm it was going to release another new Xbox in a year's time. Now, here is Phil Spencer, the boss of Xbox, after a short promo video at E3, saying what he had to say about the new console.
We are pleased to welcome the new Xbox One S console, the smallest Xbox One yet, to the Xbox One family of devices starting this August. On behalf of Team Xbox, I'd like to welcome you to what...
And that's it. Then it was on with the show. Also, I have to say, smallest Xbox One yet... seems a bit of an ambitious claim, given that there was only one.
There's only been one
so far already. But maybe he's factoring in the third Xbox One, the Scorpio model, which is coming next year. Now, this Xbox One S is an interesting one. It's a lot smaller. It's nearly half the overall volume of the Xbox One. I think it's about 40% or so slimmer than the existing one. It's going to cost £350 in August 31st, when it comes out here in Britain. And 2 terabyte hard drive. The real killer thing that I saw in this is that it will support 4K. Not 4K gaming. It will upscale games, but it's not rendering them at 4K. But it will play back 4K video. It has it says it has Blu-ray in it. I assume it means 4K Ultra HD.
Well, that would be a massive mistake if it didn't have.
Well, I'm pretty sure that's the wording I wasn't convinced by, but I'm pretty sure that's what we're going for here. It's really an entertainment console, a 4K entertainment console.
Well, the Xbox One was always heavily slanted towards entertainment, wasn't it? That was why gamers took against it.
Yes, indeed. But now they've got another reason to go against it if they want, because they can buy the original one, they can buy the Xbox One S when it comes out, and I assume it will retire the current model that's on sale now. And then in a year, we're going to get the Xbox One Scorpio that's going to be proper 4K. It'll render games in 4K, and it will be the most powerful console Microsoft's ever made, apparently.
Well, of course it will be. That's like saying, that's what, you know, every time you go in for a briefing somewhere, they say, this is our best thing ever. And you're like, well, of course it is. It's going to be better than last time, right? Otherwise, what have you been doing?
True. Unless you have some great heavy metal bands, they say, describe your new album. They say, yeah, well, you know, it's more of the same, really. No one gets away with that in gaming or technology.
Well, they should. Well, I mean, they could do. It'd be, I'd laugh. This whole Xbox thing is a mess. Like, why would you want to buy one now, then, when there's a new one coming out next year? And, you know, why is this console generation so ruined itself? Like, what were they thinking?
Strange, isn't it?
It's really
stupid. The first time we've ever seen a mid-cycle hardware refresh. Not like slimming down. We've seen slimming downs throughout the PlayStation era. You know, the NES changed design between the US, the Japanese version and the Western version. You know, and that was the first one ever, really, in this category. So, but this is the first time they've changed the silicon on the inside.
Yeah, I mean, this is a new console, essentially. I mean, it's probably... The S isn't quite as new, I'm sure, but there are rumours that it will have more beefy hardware in it, which is...
Yeah.
It's just stupid, because what are the original owners supposed to think about that? They're going to go, well, we did actually buy a pup, didn't we? Like, all of that nonsense has been confirmed, essentially.
Actually, it
was a bad console.
But this is the problem, isn't it? You sort of assume that if you've now... I mean, these consoles have been out now for, what, 3 years or so?
Yeah.
And the fact is, just because they're releasing a new one doesn't mean that the 3 years of use you've had out of yours and value you've had is somehow worthless now. It's like, we're going to release a new one. And the fact is, and I kind of agree with this, even though I do agree it's also a little bit confusing for the consumer, I read in an interview, I think possibly with Phil Spencer, saying, look, you have this setup with PCs. You have the minimum requirement specs, you have the recommended specs, and then you have the beefed out stuff.
You can't. That's the whole point of console gaming. That is a fundamental mistake to say something like that, because that is exactly the reason that people buy consoles. It's so that they don't have to mess around lifting the lid and putting new GPUs in every year at a cost of 350 quid or whatever. You know, for me, this is... I don't care. Look, I didn't buy an Xbox One for exactly this reason. If it had been... I mean, I like the Xbox 360 a great deal. Mine's broken now, so I can't play it anymore. And I like the PS3 and I like the PS4. I would have bought a Microsoft console if I had more faith in it. But ultimately, it was just... It was too expensive and it's not quite right. And this is just exactly proves it. And I might consider one when the Scorpio comes out, but not for a year, because I'm not going to pay 500 quid for it or whatever they want. And they've killed Kinect. They've clearly killed Kinect.
Yeah, you need an adapter now.
Oh, it's just ridiculous. Kinect. Like, stick by your guns, for goodness sakes. I mean, to be fair...
Hats off, admit when you were wrong.
Yes, true, but to remove a port isn't... It's not really that useful, is it? I mean, you can use an adapter. It's
when
fine.
Space is a premium and most of your client base doesn't use the thing that it supports, getting rid of it is a good idea.
It's just so sad. Kinect was such a good idea. And I think what Microsoft wanted to do, and they did a load of this just before, again, this is another historical thing, but they did a load of this just before they launched the Xbox One. They had all those really lovely ideas, didn't they, about family sharing and all this kind of stuff, and everyone went mental because they said they were going to need the console to be online every 24 hours, and that for some reason in a world where everyone is constantly online with every device they own, that was a bridge too far for the gamers, and they were like, no, we can't have that. And then they pulled it back, and in so doing they hobbled the console. They took away one of the things that I think would have made it a really, you know, a unique proposition, and they turned out a console that just wasn't quite as good as Sony's. And that's what's caused them problems. And that's why it hasn't sold. And this one won't either, until maybe Scorpio. And then even then, I don't think so, because Sony's just going to do the same thing.
Yeah.
And especially if it's backwards compatible, you have to take that into account. So the Sony's advancement in sales will count when the new Sony comes out. And Microsoft still won't have sold enough Xbox Ones to make it worth... I think it's a big mistake. if I have made that quite clear already.
You've made it quite clear. I could pick holes in the argument because I think the Xbox has done extremely well. I think a lot of people do own both consoles now at this point.
In an ideal world, you would own both. I would.
The software exclusivity has never been so profound that it's made owning one much more essential than owning the other. And the prices have come down. But, you know, the differentiation now is it seems to be on the entertainment side, which is exactly where we were at the beginning of time. So I don't know what difference this makes, other than it might be cheaper to make. Therefore, it is a better proposition from a business perspective. And, you know, compared to what's coming out in a year, it might make a more clear offering. You have the Xbox One, the little slim one that doesn't cost very much, or you buy the big tricked out beefy one that costs a lot of money and offers a bunch of stuff that most people don't want.
Better graphics, I guess, would make a load of sense. 4K. I mean, I can see it. I can see the argument. And also, let me run this by you and see if you agree. In theory, because the Xbox One runs on Windows 10, it wouldn't be impossible for both Vive and Oculus to run on the Xbox One. Now, run that up your flagpole and have a think about whether you like saluting it or not.
Depending on the hardware, it's all about hardware. It's all about processing power, and it's about connecting.
It is. I mean, but if they can't do it by the time Scorpio comes out,
Scorpio will be able to.
Whatever the hell it's called. Yeah, exactly. So I don't think you could do it now, but I think when the new one comes out, I think if you could plug in the existing VR gear to that, I think that could be a little bit of an advantage that they much need.
But that is the point of these new consoles. It's 4K and it's VR.
Oh, yeah, I know it's VR, but it's whether or not Microsoft comes up with their own thing or whether they are able to say, oh, you can use anything, which Sony won't do.
Nah, it'll be Oculus.
Yeah.
It'll be Oculus because Vive's in bed with Steam, which is the PC gaming. Sony, obviously, is in bed with its own thing.
Microsoft putting its games on Steam. So maybe a deal has been done.
Well, you never know. But the different divisions have different priorities.
Well, they do, yeah.
Let us know what you think. Let us know what your priorities are. podcast@natelangson.com. I'd love to hear your thoughts on the impending second battle of the consoles, the 3.5 edition, whatever we're calling it.
Just get a PC, mate. That's all I do now, PC game. I love it. It's brilliant.
podcast@natelangson.com. Let us know what you think. That is the end of the show today. It will be 1 week until we see you next time. We may or may not have left the European Union.
Oh, God, don't even say it.
Vote carefully. Please leave a review in iTunes, tell a friend, and if nothing else, tune in again in a week.
Hey, welcome to the Next Wave podcast. Consider us your chief AI officer in your business. My name is Matt Wolf. I have the number one YouTube channel in the AI space. I also run FutureTools.com, and I'm joined by my co-host, Nathan Lands, founder of Lore.com. We want to bring you the latest AI news and trends, show you how you can use AI in your business and personal life, and help make it super easy for you to understand and execute. We're going to equip you with the knowledge to thrive in this upcoming wave of change.